Welcome to Come and See, your podcast for finding truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. With host and founder, Richard Case, and co-host and retreat leader, Kathy Riccone. Jesus reminds us to watch for the signs of his return. Today, we will explore further what we are seeing in our times that line up with what signs he said would indicate the potential of the end and his return. We will also discuss the practical meaning of this as we watch and as a remnant prepare as he so leads. And now your host, Richard Case.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is End Times Friday, part two with our good friends, Eric and Rabbi Ephraim. And last time we talked about the anti-Semitism, you know, particularly as we experience it, it's always an enigma because it's based on false narrative when the truth is completely different. Anybody with a rational thought would understand that. And by the way, if any of what happened to you, what happens to you, happened to America, we wouldn't give it 10 seconds. It would be that would be the end of it. We're not putting up with that, and we would all agree with that. So it's an interesting thing that the world can go the opposite way, you know, based on false.
And that even just highlights the fact that this is spiritual.
Yeah.
Period. You know, this is principalities and powers. There is no logic based in anything. This is, you know, the hatred, the chaos, the division, that is of the enemy, period.
Yeah. Yep. So we want to talk about, you know, current news is what's happening in Gaza. And there's three questions to look at is what's being reported here, even by our administration, is that the deal is done for the hostages and then a way to oversee the land, number one. Number two is that this is going to be a rebuilding of Gaza. And then three is that this is actually part of a Middle East peace and everybody is joining it, including the Muslims, except for the extremists. So, you know, why don't you talk through, first of all, tell us exactly what is happening with this so-called agreement relative to hostages and the way that they're going to manage it.
Well, the way it's being presented here is that there's an expectation that sometime by the end of today, the parties are going to sign a form of a first phase of the agreement. And that first phase involves the full release of all living hostages and as many of the dead hostages, the bodies that they can find. And there's some expectations that they're not. In exchange, Israel's probably going to be releasing some very nefarious people from its prisons who are serving multiple life sentences for killing and murdering, conducting very evil acts for many years. We're serving many life term sentences, some multiple. So if we're getting 20 life hostages, my guess is we're talking probably something in the vicinity of about 150 to 200 really evil people, including an additional probably, I'm hearing, on the order of 1,000 people that have been imprisoned from Gaza as a consequence of this conflict, many of whom were perpetrators of the events on October 7th. Mm-hmm. And so
I think it's 1,000.
Everyone here is kind of holding their breath. The people, the demonstrations that used to be taking place outside my apartment where I am right now in Tel Aviv every night, there wasn't one last night. People are just basically at home praying and doing whatever they feel that they can to make this deal happen and get it done. And that's what will happen. And I think the actual exchanges are supposed to take place early next week. And then around that same time, Israeli troops, the IDF troops, are going to pull back to a defined perimeter. There are like three stages to its withdrawal that are mapped out. And this will be the first stage. They'll still be in roughly more than half of the land area of Gaza, but they'll evacuate to a certain region that will give everybody more area to get out. And then they have to start negotiating the rest of the deal. And this, in essence, ends the war, okay? Now, depending upon, I think there's a very minor, probably you can't even collect them in a single room, a number of Israelis who actually believe this will lead to real ceasefire. Everyone fully expects that Hamas, I mean, even the last few days when supposedly there's been a ceasefire in place, all that's happened is Hamas has tried numerous times to attack Israeli positions in Gaza, not by rockets or mortars, but physically with people. And Israel's taken a defensive position, shot them down when they attacked, but hasn't gone in pursuit because it's trying to get this deal done. What happens after the exchanges of these two populations remains to be seen, how this is going to hold up. It's also expected that two extreme right-wing parties in the current government will probably bolt the government because they believe this is a terrible agreement to agree to, and that leaving Hamas with any kind of power in Gaza is a huge mistake. That's their firm position. And they'll probably leave the government, but we're in a parliamentary democracy, but they probably won't vote against the government to bring it down, meaning forcing new elections. They'll probably just stand on the sidelines and let things go. So the government will continue doing what it's doing. But that's, I think, what most people expect. And then no one really knows. I think there is interest from the Israeli side to pursue this. The troops are tired. They want to come back. They want to get the economy revved up again in Israel. And having reserve soldiers fighting in Gaza prevents that. And so they want to do that. They would like to, of course, stop all this nonsense that appears on the evening news across all the West, showing all these ridiculous images coming out of Gaza, many of which are fake, but nonetheless, that's what the people see. But it depends upon what price. And so it's Israel's attitude that Hamas will lay down its arms, and some of its leaders may go into exile, some not. And then there'll be some discussion about what comes next. It's been the government's position that there'll be no Palestinian Authority involvement, but I think most Israelis would view that as unrealistic. There'll have to be some involvement of Israelis. There were clauses put into the Trump plan, which says that any involvement of the Palestinian Authority in assuming control over Gaza at some level depends upon their reforming themselves. And there are some key stipulations in that that include giving all these scholarships to terrorists and their families after killing. The more Jews you kill in a terrorist attack, the more your money you receive and the family receives the rest of your life. Or if you deceased, your family still gets it. They teach their children in their school system not only to hate Jews and to hate, but also instruct them on how to actually lace a knife with rat poison and where to stab a human being in order to kill them the quickest, and all kinds of really evil things. And so part of the reforms that are put into this 21-point plan state that that goes away. But who's going to enforce it? I don't know. So I think you're seeing a lot of skepticism here in Israel, but, you know, everyone wants to see the hostages back. Ryan, you want to add?
Yeah, I'll just add, I totally agree with the skepticism thing that, as I've said before, we've been to this movie before where we withdraw, or so we withdrew from Lebanon, and supposedly a multinational force comes in to make sure that Hezbollah terrorists don't come back in, and thousands of soldiers get placed in the security zone to make sure that doesn't happen. But then they watch as tens of thousands of missiles brought in by Hezbollah under the noses of the international peacekeepers that do nothing. And then the moment they want to start launching it, Hezbollah calls up the peacekeepers and says, by the way, we're going to start shooting thousands of rockets at Israeli cities. So do you mind just pulling out for a while we do that? And then they all pack up and leave. And the same thing happened when Israel attempted to create peace with the Palestinian Authority in Oslo. We made these great sacrifices for peace with the understanding that the Palestinian Authority would reform, would stop teaching terrorism, would stop teaching hate, agree to Israel's existence. And then instead they launch a terror war, the Intifada, and kill over 1,000 Jews and Arabs in terror attacks. And we're the bad guys, even though we're the ones who made the sacrifices and took the risks for peace. So we're not very confident. This sounds, looks, and feels like the exact same thing. Like when you look at it, it looks all happy and nice, and the reform, and there's going to be an international force is going to come in and make sure it all happens. But it's all in the execution. And in the past, the execution was always a disaster, because which country wants to risk their lives to kill Hamas terrorists so they don't send rockets at Israeli cities? Only the IDF usually is willing to do that.
Right.
And so there's a lot of skepticism, but I agree with Eric. At this point, it's just become a little too much for the society. People are just so in so much pain that the hostages are still being starved and tortured and complicated, and we have to get them out. And the cost of running a two-year war and losing over 1,000, you know, really beautiful sacrificed soldiers that have died fight these evil terrorists, it's been a little bit too much. So everyone, well, the amazing thing about this, I do want to say, the amazing thing about this agreement is that the hostages are getting released first. It's pretty spectacular negotiating. And hopefully when Hamas, if and when Hamas starts breaking the agreement, we will be in a strong enough position that we can go back and fight again.
Yeah, that's my question, is that we know that there's not going to be reform. You know, they're deceivers, and they have an ideology that's deeper than that. They're not interested in reformation at all. So that's not going to happen. So after the hostages are released and they start to restructure to obviously fulfill their goal, which is to eliminate Israel, what is Israel going to do in the meantime to watch it? And then when they start to see it again, what will they do?
That is the questions.
Yeah, I'm not sure we know. You know, right now, the expectations in Israel are, and it seems to be in the current 21 points, that at the end of all this, and there's a new provisional government running, and Hamas has laid down its weapons, and et cetera, et cetera. Even when that happens, the Israeli Defense Forces are maintaining a perimeter around Gaza. It varies depending upon where you are, but somewhere between 0.5 to 1 kilometer. And so for your listeners, 1 kilometer is about 2/3 of a statute mile.
Right.
Okay. And that's the entire perimeter. There's going to be nothing built there. It's a no man's land. There are going to be instructions. Any human being found in that area will be shot, you know, with no questions asked. And so if that holds, it's a big if, then that will make it much more difficult for Hamas to launch an October 7th type of attack.
Yeah.
And it'll be harder for them to dig the tunnels underground to reach there. And so the only way they can attack from Gaza, okay, we're talking now just about Gaza, there's a lot going on in Judea and Samaria also, but from Gaza would be by air. And Israel now has its Iron Beam working, which is these laser systems which shoot these rockets out of the air. So we're no longer spending, you know, $500,000 to shoot down a $1,000 rocket. We'll be spending, you know, a few dollars to shoot it down. So this will make it very difficult for them to perpetrate problems on our society. But they can do a lot in Judea and Samaria. You know, no one thinks about that. And I mean, just, was it yesterday, Ron, or 2 days ago? They showed on TV, the IDF uncovered a massive attempt by Iran to smuggle a huge, I mean, we're talking about probably 6 semi-trailers worth of arms into Judea and Samaria to be used against, you know, the perpetrator. And the IDF is just all the time on its toes in these areas to stop this kind of stuff. And so it's not just Gaza that's the problem.
Yeah. And the if this all transpires, will the aid to the citizens of Gaza start to flow?
It's been flowing all along. That's the total nonsense you hear in the West. You know, there was an article in the Wall Street, in the Washington Post, which has been extremely anti-Israel throughout this entire thing, where one of their reporters or an analyst went actually into Gaza and saw firsthand what was going on with the Gaza Humanitarian Fund and praised them for what they were doing and how the aid was being distributed. You can't count on your, you can take your shoes, maybe you can take your shoes off if you need to count the number of people that have actually died of malnutrition in Gaza.
Yeah.
It is less than 10 people. All this is nonsense. All these things have been propagated in the West. Total nonsense. And the UN is part of the problem, not a part of the solution. And so that's another problem, entanglement that's going to have to be dealt with in terms of Gaza. From an Israeli perspective, there's no role for the UN anymore. And so we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah,
so,
I agree. So in terms of humanitarian aid, as Eric says, it's been flowing the whole time. That will continue. What worries me and many other people is the rebuilding of Gaza, which in the past, you know, they do this every 10 years. So again, like we've seen this, tens of millions or billions of dollars come in to help them rebuild their society. And it just gets siphoned off by the terror organizations at the top, whether it's Fatah, you know, Arafat, you know, his daughter is worth $8 billion today, or the leaders of Hamas. They just siphon off billions of dollars, both for their own personal ends and also to restock and prepare for their next wave. They patiently, you know, like this time leading up to October 7th, they spent 18 years of siphoning off money from international aid to build miles of tunnels so that they could resist, which they've done pretty well, the Israeli invasion, so that they could hold on to hostages, so they could continue shooting rockets no matter what. So, you know, what's going to make it any different this time? Hard to know. So that makes us really nervous as well.
Is there any plan to rebuild Gaza, you know, with buildings and infrastructure? And
well, you know, there's talk of that, of course, in the plan. Tony Blair, probably one of the few individual international figures, is probably trusted by the Israelis to some to a large extent, and by the Arab community, is supposed to be playing a big role in all this, but he's going to be in a very difficult position. Look, even amongst the Gulf countries and the Arab countries here in the Middle East, the only country that I could envision wanting to put up funds to help restore Gaza is probably Qatar. Yeah. That has the capability. Okay, If I were Saudi Arabia, a king or whatever, why am I going to put money into this entity when Hamas is still there, knowing that all they're going to do is take this money and rebuild the tunnels, and then in 15 years, Israel is going to have to come back in and destroy it again. It's called insanity. Why would you do such a thing? But Qatar doesn't care, because Qatar is all about funding the fanatics. You know, they put funding into the Taliban, they put funding into ISIS and Hamas. It's all part of the same infrastructure. A lot of the problems we're having in the West are because of the Qatari money. But in any case, I don't know. I mean, Turkey would be very happy to put in, you know, construction companies to help rebuild. Qatar would be very happy to put money in to do it, but I don't know anybody else. I could be wrong. I mean, I don't know who else is going to put money in for this. You've got to be crazy. Europeans are nuts enough. Maybe they want to do it, you know, put money in. I don't know. It's all. Yeah. I tried to explain to your listeners before, this is all, it's all a Ponzi scheme. And everybody in the West should figure this out. This is a society built on a Ponzi scheme. It's worse than Bernie Madoff. Give me all your money, okay, for aid. And I have no economy. I have no interest in building an economy. I have no interest in building a society. I have no interest in building institutions of governance, because I don't care about them. All I want is your money to pilfer off in my own personal bank account, right? And to build up an army to go attack Israel, and then we'll do it and repeat.
And I'll just add, and they don't make a secret of this. You know, this is their official papers, their official charter, their speeches in Arabic. There's no secret about it. Not to mention their actions, but they don't say, oh, you know what, you know, we've learned our lesson. Terrorism anymore, we're going to live side by side peacefully. Like, they don't say that, but the Western countries also somehow assume they must be normal, lovely Western Christians who just want peace.
Yeah, right. In that regard, and the administration have said that this is bringing a true peace to the Middle East. And there's obviously even there a lot of skepticism just because of what you say. What's the sense of that?
I think what what Trump has done here is incredible, you know. And I'm not going to judge whether he deserves a Nobel Prize or not. I'm not on the committee, so it doesn't matter what I think. What this can lead to is for there are some very significant Arab and non-Arab Muslim states to strike a diplomatic relationship with Israel. They want to see a quote-unquote path to a Palestinian state. They don't need to see a declaration of a Palestinian state or everything defined. They don't need a path. And what's outlined in this 21-point plan is a path, okay? It says, you know, if the Palestinian Authority does X, Y, Z first, then they can take over more power in Gaza. Okay, that's what the agreement says. And if it's implemented, and if it's adhered to as it's currently written, or as we currently understand it, most Israelis will find this a very acceptable scenario. And we believe that Saudi Arabia and Indonesia and some other key countries will see it as an avenue for them to strike up a relationship with Israel finally, because, quote unquote, there's a path. But there's a big onus on the Palestinian Authority to do X, Y, Z, which they've never done in their past, and there's no evidence they're capable of doing in the future More importantly, there's probably no interest in them doing it in the future. So, because they're not interested in the state, it's all nonsense. So, but, you know, things change. You know, we interpret the agreement this way, and then some European idiot, like, you know, Emmanuel Macron, will stand up and teach it and interpret it a different way. And who knows how this ball is going to roll down the hill yet. It's not clear.
Rabbi, any thoughts on that, Rabbi?
Yeah, just that, like, if you look at the key characters that are supposed to be involved in implementing the plan, like the central ones of rebuilding Gaza and stuff, Qatar, Egypt, and Turkey. You know, every one of those are people that support terrorism, have supported Hamas in the past, hate Israel, make no secret about it, you know, really hate Israel. Even Egypt, which has peace, they hate Israel and condemn Israel at every possible opportunity. So, like, these are, you know, working, you know, like, who are, and then you've got England and France thrown into the mass, who also, you know, have declared a Palestinian state recognizing, you know, like, Hamas or Fatah. Which terror organization do you recognize as the leader of the Palestinian state that you recognized? So, you know, the characters involved, other than the United States, are not our friends. So, you know, Trump's a pretty strong guy, and he's pretty amazing at pushing his weight around. But this is going to be a long process, and it's another reason for skepticism.
Yeah.
But it's still, despite what he said and I've said, I think that the talk about this bringing peace to the Middle East is talking more about not just like peace between us and our neighbors, but peace between Israel and the larger Arab community.
Yeah.
In the form of Saudi Arabia and Indonesia. And that could happen. That could happen.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we all feel tremendous gratitude towards Trump for whatever the level of this agreement is. And it does look like, as these other peace deals with Saudi Arabia and others, you know, in the back of his mind. And of course, those things will really strengthen and bring peace towards the Middle East in a very significant way and help us in, you know, deal with the Palestinian issue.
So with these larger Sunni states, will that then, if they do strengthen the relationship with Israel, will that help, you know, the situation in Israel over the short term?
Yeah, I think it will. Yeah. I think inevitably it will, because ironically, we'll have probably better trading partners in parts of the Arab world than we may have with Europe in the future.
Yeah.
You know, because what's going on in Europe is amazing. You know, it's how quickly the continent is changing in dynamics. I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. It's interesting. Well, thank you so much for sharing all that info about what really is going on in Gaza. We'll be watching it, obviously. Is it really going to be pulled off, which we actually hope that at least you get the hostage scenario. I think it sounds like, you know, in Israel, and we kind of understand that, is if it's truly all done, finished, even though you're going to know who's alive and who's dead, it'll kind of just end a certain season of that and then give you a chance to decide what to do next. So that's a good thing. And we're going to pray that it finishes. And maybe, like you said, we're taping this ahead of the time it'll air, but maybe by the time this airs, it's all been completed, which would be good. So thank you for your input. And we'll look forward to, you know, catching up in a month and all the next things that are going to come, particularly as we start talking about this. Okay, what does it mean for the Saudi Arabia and others if they strengthen that relationship with Israel? How would they do it, and what would that look like? So we'll want to explore that. So thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, guys. It is always a pleasure to have you guys. You truly are a blessing to us and to our listeners. And listeners, thanks for joining us today. If you have questions, send them in to us at questions@abideministries.com. And we look forward to seeing you next time.
Yep, we'll see you then.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Come and See, your podcast for truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. Send us your questions and comments and tune in tomorrow for more answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. Remember, God's will is best and none better. His truth brings peace in this world of chaos.